Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the next episode of SCI TV. Today, we're welcoming Sanday Golkart. Thank you so much, Sanday, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're super excited to get to know what you've been doing. And, you know, your LinkedIn profile says results architect, and that, you know, you help leaders achieve breakthrough growth. And I'm just so curious to find out how you got to that, you know, career. And I know that you're a D1 athlete. So just really curious to hear your background story and what it is you're doing today.
Yeah. So after, you know, a career in athletics as a D1 athlete, I then spent 30 years as an executive in the corporate world. Mm-hmm. But the last 6 years, I've been just obsessed with transformation and growth. And I've really done everything I can to obsessively look at, understand growth from as much of a well-rounded perspective as I possibly can, so that I could really help people, including myself, like unlock what our true potential is. And I just have an unbelievable, passionate curiosity for exploring that topic, understanding it. Mm-hmm. I spent the last year alongside Joe Pine, who just released his book, The Transformation Economy. And this seems to mm-hmm. be where everything is heading. You know, how do we transform the meaning of our lives, the meaning of what we're doing, and really make sure that we're making the most of this amazing opportunity we have called the life.
Yeah. And looking back at your experience, how was your time as a college athlete, and what sport did you play?
Yeah, so I played basketball. I played at the University of Colorado, started all 4 years. That journey started as a young teenager. I felt like I received this personal invitation from Michael Jordan when I was watching his video called Come Fly With Me. And it felt to me like a personal invitation. And I remember just becoming, again, obsessed with this idea of flying. And I started doing 1,400 toe raises every night. I had 14 steps in my house, and I would do 100 toe raises on every step every night, just knowing that I was accepting this invitation. Fast forward about 5 years, I found myself holding the trophy for winning the National Slam Dunk contest in Lubbock, mm-hmm. Texas. And then going on and getting a scholarship to the University of Colorado, starting all 4 years. Then my life hit kind of the first miniature cliff, which is when I blew my knee out. And I was backcountry skiing, and it was this first wake-up call saying, okay, athletics is over in the way that you've experienced it. What next? And mm-hmm. without really having any tools for business, you know, I had a marketing degree now from the University of Colorado. I just set out to use what I knew as an athlete to size up the competition, outwork everybody, mm-hmm. and just get promoted. But my goal was really just to become a provider, to make money. It didn't have a ton of substance, but I didn't really know that at the time. Yeah. We had, you know, raised two beautiful kids, got them through college, you know, helped them enter the world healthy and debt-free. And then I started to realize, like, for myself, had I really explored and emptied the tank with what I was really encoded to do while I'm here? And something inside of me just said, explore transformation, explore growth. And that journey led me to realize really everything about growth is learning about what's inside of here. You know, why mm-hmm. are you doing what you're doing? Where does that come from? And I've found that most all of our lives, we're experiencing it really through our subconscious. Everything in front of us is mirroring back what we need. And it changed my perspective in seeing that life will present you with circumstances and people to show you where you're not free. And your opportunity to live an expansive life is to go inside here, address all your own limited constraints and really free yourself so that you can achieve inner peace and then create from that place the most amazing life that you've ever experienced. And there's a quote from Rumi that I think is really beautiful that says, you know, seek not for love, seek for all the barriers that you've built up inside of you against love. And I think the same thing, you could substitute love for self-worth, accomplishment, money, wealth. It's all out there. There's an abundance of it. It's what barriers have you built inside of you against it? And the real journey is finding out what's going on in my mind, what's going on in my body that has built up these barriers against whatever it is I want to experience from life. And learning to resolve it from in here, not out there.
Yeah. I mean, I totally hear what you're saying. I feel like a lot of people do want to come to that, but they don't know how. Because, you know, we get caught up in a loop and it's hard to break away and actually, you know, get more in tune with oneself. So how can, you know, as an athlete or, you know, an executive too, how do you find the time and the motivation to tune in with yourself more despite the high pressure, the competition, the expectations, etc.?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the first thing is you have to really want it and explore why you want it. If it's not a priority, if you're not really obsessed with it, you're not going to make the necessary changes because those changes are really hard. So like Simon Sinek would say, like, find out your why. Why do you really want to transform or grow in the first place? Once you've made that decision that, yes, I really want to explore, I want to see what the best version of myself looks like, you have to create space. So that feeling that you don't have the time to do it, that feeling that there's not enough room, is all coming from a thought that you don't have the space to expand into. So I would first take inventory of all the places you're giving energy, the people in your life, the things that you're signed up for, the people you're trying to help, and really take inventory of all of that. Start cutting out all of the ones that are not aligned with where you want to go and stop giving energy to those things. Then you can start to create more space in your mind and in your physical reality. Purge your closet. Get rid of all your stuff, all the things that, you know, you're not using. Get rid of them. It'll create space. And so what's essential for the need to transform is the space to expand into. So you have to create that room, in the space.
I super interesting. I think one of the most challenging things is the fear of letting go. Like, for example, you know, you might want to have a different job, right? Somebody, for example, but they would be terrified of leaving their current job and creating that space for a new thing because, well, you're not going to have the stability of the income, new job is not guaranteed. So how do you navigate, you know, the ambiguity that is tied to, you know, just stepping into the zone of unpredictability?
Yeah.
And because it's hard for some people, like personally, I know that it would be hard for me to let go of my comfort zone in order to attract something better.
Yeah. So the key to all of it is clarity. So what I would say to anybody, you know, who is wrestling with that question that you're asking, like, how do I let go and go chase what I really think that I want, which might be a new job, might be a new partner, is to sit with that for a little bit. And again, take inventory. So if you're in a job that's giving you some energy back, maybe it's a paycheck, maybe it's stability, stick with it while you get clear about why do I really want this new job? Why do I want to explore this? And start creating space for you to sit and think and get in touch with the real feeling of what it is you're chasing. Because what you will find is you're not actually chasing more money, you're not chasing a new job or a title. It probably has to do with where you're creating self-worth And when you start to really see that you are a boundless, limitless soul, you start to realize it's not the new job that I'm after. It's realizing and reclaiming my own self-worth. Mm-hmm. And that's the journey. So from there, you can then see, like, let's just make up an example. Maybe you're working for somebody. The culture feels kind of toxic. It doesn't feel like you're adding much value in the world. And you know deep down, I want to do something bigger. So as you start to get more and more clear about what you're encoded to do, like what are your special, unique talents? What's your special, unique voice in this world? Still hold on to the job that you have. Still work that job, but see it for what it is. It's a job. It's giving you money and it's a transaction. And there's nothing wrong with that. As you start to get more and more clear about where you really want to go, you'll start testing and you'll start to explore, maybe put your resume out. But when you're really clear about your own self-worth, you will not settle for something that's less than what you're currently doing. You'll step into something bigger, more aligned, and you'll slowly start to see those patterns leading you to a place where you're finding more fulfillment in the job that you take. The mistake would be, I want to go do something else. I've not explored it or gotten clear on it. So I'm just going to close shop on my job and try to find something new. And that will just create this furnace of anxiety and stress in your life. It's not helpful. So,
but what about athletes, essentially, because their jobs are their lives, right? They grew up in the sport, they participate in the throat, they're adolescents, they're trying to go pro. And it's really difficult, I think, when you're tying your identity to your career and your path. So I think, you know, like realizing that like your job could be not a transaction and it's just something that is not you. But a lot of people, especially in the sports world, do attribute their existence to their craft. And like outside, like artists, musicians, architects, doctors, whatever it might be, there are a lot of people that are so dedicated to what it is they're doing that they cannot imagine their lives without that. So how do you navigate that challenge of like separating who you are from what you do? Because it's harder than it looks.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful question. The distinction is very subtle, but incredibly important. It's making sure that you're not tying your self-worth to the results. So like I've studied Michael Jordan, I've studied Kobe mm-hmm. Bryant. They all had this point in time where their results were defining who they were. Mm-hmm. And once they detached from the results speaking about or having anything to do with their personal value or their self-worth, they detached from it and they said, like Kobe Bryant, for example, he said, a lot of athletes either hate to lose or love to win, and they chase or run away from those, and that defines them as an athlete. But once you can let go of winning or losing or the performative nature of competing, you actually get in touch with your craft and you start perfecting your craft. You start realizing I'm encoded for this. Kobe Bryant was encoded to be an amazing basketball player. But when his self-worth was tied to the results, it affected him personally. Whether he won or lost seemed to tie to his own self-worth, which creates stress. It creates fear, the fear of not losing or of losing, or the fear of not winning. And that creates a different level of stress in your mind and your body. So once you can detach from that and say, I'm gonna miss most of the shots I take. I'm just gonna learn how to take the shot better next time. And I'm gonna show up without being attached to the result. I'm just going to learn and explore like a kid would. How can I do it better? How can I continue to improve my craft without it being tied to the results. That will let you explore like your full potential without it being tied to your self-worth. And that's kind of that beautiful transcendence where you're really performing and mastering a craft, not letting it define your worth. You know, Picasso would be a great example as well. He just, you know, he was famous for saying something along the lines, I don't have the quote right in front of me, but you spend your life recognizing your gift. And then once you've mastered your gift, you spend the rest of your life giving that gift away without it being tied to money, fame. Those things will come as a result of you mastering your craft, not tying your self-worth to it.
Yeah. And beautifully said. And you know, your time as an executive, right, in corporate America, like in that leadership role, you probably came across a lot of the younger talent, you know, kids that are just still figuring it out, or you know, managers and senior managers that could be struggling with, you know, student loans or whatever that means, like some of those financial aspects. And how, from your experience, or you know, from your mentors perhaps, how do you navigate, you know, establishing that support for people that work on the same team with you, but are still struggling to, you know, figure out if this is for them, how can they make it their craft? What is this really about? Because a lot of people come into their first, second, or third jobs just out of college, you know, they need the money. Not many people actually know what they want to do for their whole lives, right? Not even young people. So do you have any tips or tricks for somebody that just don't have it figured out, which is absolutely fine?
Yeah, no, it's really critical to get and find an amazing mentor.
Mm-hmm.
And a mentor. So if you are a mentor, like as a leader, we're mentors and leaders to other people, it's really important to understand the basics of human psychology. So people's mm-hmm. primary need is to feel safe. So if you're a leader and you have one of these people that you're describing, a younger person, maybe some debt, they're not feeling safe. So as a leader, your first primary job above all, everything else, is to help them realize they're safe on your team, to be themselves, to really explore their craft. Don't worry too much early on about the numbers or performance. I want you to understand how to get really good at your job. And if I'm a good leader, and I feel free, I can provide that safety. If you are under a less developed leader, they may be struggling with the same fear that they're not safe, and they will simply pass that on to you. And that is not a good mentor for you to have. That person will make you feel inadequate, not enough, and you'll feel this stress around needing to perform that's really not that needed early on in your career. Early on in your career, you're kind of doing tasks and you're learning your craft. You should find a leader and a mentor. And if it's not in your company, find one outside of your company that helps you to feel safe, to explore who you really are, to explore the talents and skills you have, and to see if that job is for you. And if it's not, don't tie your self-worth to making a job change. You know, if you find that I've explored this, I'm not getting a ton of joy, it's plenty okay to say, this isn't for me, I'm gonna go somewhere else. But that primary need of feeling safe is the most primal need that people have. The second one is to feel seen and to feel heard. So allow people to express their opinions. You know, no matter how ridiculous they are, a great leader can make space for other people's reality. And it's really important that you allow that space for someone to express themselves fully, to feel seen and to feel heard. And as we get more into like conflict resolution, this is probably the single most important thing of resolving any conflict. Make sure the other side is seen and heard, and they will relax.
Yeah.
Once they relax, you can now enter into a conversation about what the best possible outcome can be, not And you can put the ego to the side because the ego needs to be right. So that's sort of jumping ahead a little bit, but early on in your career, to get back to the original question, find a place where you have a mentor that helps you feel safe, secure, so that you can explore and try to master some skills.
Yeah.
And then find out, is it for you? Is it not for you? And if you're a leader, really explore how you can do a better job doing that, making that available to your team. I heard a relationship coach once say, people don't fall in love with other people. They don't fall in love with jobs. They don't fall in love with companies. They fall in love with the version of themselves that they get to be when they're with that person or with that company. And that's such a beautiful way to reframe relationships.
No, that is, wow, so well said. Really so well said. I mean, I feel like it's just such an interesting conversation, because a lot of people, right, they, like coaches, for example, they have a team, especially like, let's take a look at like Premier League or like professional football, right? Those are the best of the best. And as a coach or as a leader, you have to navigate, you know, a lot of different opinions and like a lot of egos, and you said it, and it's tough. So like, in your opinion, what, when you're navigating a team of very big and important people already, how can you cater enough to the team dynamics in a way where they're actually going to increase results, right? Like in sports, it could be winning trophies, or like if you're running a team of executives, could be, I don't know, business development, revenue growth, whatever the metrics are for that particular organization. But how can a good leader be good for everyone?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the leaders that I've studied a lot, there are two, John Wooden was one from UCLA, but also Phil Jackson. And one of the things that Phil Jackson did better than almost any coach in professional elite sports, he addressed those very specific primal needs. He made sure that their unique skills and capabilities were seen, they were recognized, and they were acknowledged. And then once you do that, those unique skills fit in very well with a team dynamic. But if you don't acknowledge those things and you don't use them for the greater good of the team, that need for someone to express themselves may overshadow and override the team dynamic. So they'll step outside of the team dynamics to try to be seen, to be heard, to be recognized. And that's not good for the team. So an amazing coach will make space for everyone's unique talent. And I don't know how well you follow like American basketball, but on many of those teams that Phil Jackson coached, Dennis Rodman was one of the players. And he was seen as this outcast, very much trying to be seen in the real world. And Phil had this amazing ability to see the beauty of his independence, the green hair, the tattoos, the piercings, and to recognize this is a guy who wants to walk backwards. And he related to him in a Native American language that identified this as a very spiritual, powerful person that reflects back to the tribe the need to be unique and different. And then he created space for him inside of these championship teams where he could play that role and show everyone it's okay to express that. And then it allowed him to show up fully and deliver his unique skills, which were rebounding and defense. Not always the most glamorous parts of the team, but the essential glue of a championship team is how do you contribute that way? And know that you're shining in your moment to deliver your special set of skills and contributing to the overall team success.
Yeah. I mean, great point. I think allowing people to be themselves and really express and, you know, try and do whatever feels right. I generally agree that this is the path to success in professional corporate America or sports or whatever it might be, is not is allowing people to think outside the box, innovate, try things for what works for them. Cause I don't think there is a rule book for success. And like, it comes in so many different like shapes and forms, and it's so different for everyone. So thank you so much for sharing that. That was brilliant. Yeah. And for my last question, I'm curious to hear what's next for you in your practice and some of the work that you do right now, and how you have seen, you know, the trends have changed over the last few years. And it's a very interesting practice, and I feel like it heavily overlaps with what we do.
Yeah.
Say with conflict resolution and just some organizational development. So curious to, you know, hear about that for a bit.
The thing I'm most fascinated by, you know, moving forward, is helping people understand that all of the answers are inside of you. Like, we are, mm-hmm. everything that we're seeking is us. And so a lot of leaders make the mistake by looking at symptoms, like they want more revenue, they want more wins, they want more championships. Well, those are symptoms of the byproduct of a great ecosystem. And you are your own ecosystem, and your business is its own ecosystem. So I'm very passionate about helping leaders understand the problem is never out there. In fact, there's no such thing as problems. I help people actually dissolve the illusion that there are any problems, not fix problems. And when a leader wraps their mind around that, they're able to go inside and grow personally. It frees them up to be a better, more expansive leader for everybody on their team, in their community, mm-hmm. at home. And that's what I'm most interested in pursuing and helping bring to the world, helping leaders find inner peace. Because from a place of inner peace, I have no problem with what anyone else in the world is doing. They're just being themselves. The moment my peace or anything that I want out of life is tied to the way other people are acting or reacting, I've now created conflict and resistance inside of me. So I'm just trying to help more and more people dissolve that resistance, be the most full version of themselves, the most expansive version, which makes room for everybody. Then they can use their discernment to put the pieces together and get the most out of their team, out of their life, and out of the results that they really want.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, so beautifully said. And I couldn't agree more. I think a lot of people tend to overthink and put just extra emphasis on what's going on. And it's sometimes if you let things go, they work out. And life has a way of taking you on the path. And I know that a lot of young adults, and like everybody in for that matter, they do struggle with so many different elements of life, and there is no magical pill that fixes it all. And I think we do work in such interesting spaces where we get to cater to so many different lives and so many different organizations, and actually learn about human behavior, because at the end of the day, we're so different, yet we're after similar things. Right. Yeah. It's joy. It's some type of happiness. It's some type of whatever makes us feel alive and feel good. And we're just out there trying to seek it. So, well, thank you so much for your time. I feel like this has been super, super interesting. And I cannot wait for our listeners to, you know, get a little bit of your wisdom. Like, it was great. And I love the perspective that you shared. And I think, as I said, as you said, teams cannot be successful without strong individuals and without great leaders. So I greatly appreciate your time, Sandy. Thank you so, so much for giving us those 20, 30 minutes. And yeah. We are very excited to be, you know, staying in touch with you, looking at your work, reading your publications. So thank you once again. And yeah, we hope you have a great day.
All right. Thank you, Anna.
Thank you.